Hello, and welcome to an all-star edition of The Dive. I'm Jack, joined by Kobe and Azale. And
hello.
Today we're going to be talking a little bit about the upcoming All-Star Tournament, but also a few other things.
Yeah, and if people haven't been paying attention, this All-Stars is going to be a little bit different. They wanted to make it more competitive, so we basically have the real All-Star teams, you know, trying to win 5-on-5 games, and then we still have some fun matches with the 1v1s in store for you.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking a lot about patch, about the new runes, things that have been going on with that. And also, I kind of wanted to start off talking a little bit about Kespa Cup, because obviously All-Stars is going to be kind of the first English broadcasted tournament on the new runes, but Kespa Cup did just happen. Not that many people maybe watched because it was a Korean-only broadcast, but was pretty exciting with a lot of the top teams.
Yeah, as you said, Korean-only broadcast, but it had all the world's Korean teams, Samsung, SKT, Longju, also had KT, who ended up winning it. Since even I had a hard time like watching a lot of it, I caught most of the final games and the semifinal games, but like, what stood out to you in that tournament, like patch-wise?
I mean, to me, one of the things that was the most interesting was actually how highly people are prioritizing Poke with the new runes as comparison to some of the masteries that I have been seeing more, you know, press the attack on almost every carry, 80 carry is what I've been seeing in solo queues, what I've been seeing on pro streams. In the Kespa Cup, almost everyone was just, how do you run Comet in this lane? How do we run two Comets in this lane? There were melee supports and things, and there were some differences. Like, there was Lethal Tempo Kalista and whatnot, but it would be like Ashe, lots of MF support. There was Xeris support. There was all kinds of stuff to just proc Comet nonstop, even Varus with Comet, Jhin with Comet, everyone just trying to like poke each other out of lane, even top lane, Sion with Comet, Olaf with Comet, like Comet
relax,
is worth it.
Yeah, yeah, we heard it's Comet, man. Yeah.
The Sion thing happened one time.
That happened a couple games.
Out of the whole tournament.
It was in one series, but the point is just, it was more than one game.
Regardless though, I do like your point because, you know, Comet was super undervalued because everybody was all over the Airy, you know, when Airy first came out, numbers were super high and you could proc it so often that it was just all about anyone taking Airy and trading in lane and stuff. But as this, you know, tournament came up and all these teams were try hard a little bit more, the lethality AD carries I think are the best ones to use these Comet builds like you're talking about. So that's why we saw the Misfortune has made her way back, not only in the AD carry role but also as a support, also bringing Comet no matter which one she is down there. And the Xerath support you're talking about, it can also be played mid lane, but it is super highly prized as support. 15 bans, Xerath bans actually in this tournament. Maybe the most Xerath bans I've ever seen in my life in any meta. He's never really been super dominant, but I did like how when this Poke is emerging and there you see like, oh, you feel like you're getting overwhelmed by Poke, the supports with Engage are also represented really strongly.
Yes.
Leona is completely bonkers right now. I think she is just, you know, cream of the crop, and then also Alistar was very highly prized. So the Engage supports along with the Poke, I like that there's always kind of a rise of the predominant, you know, overwhelming meta, and then the counter always is going to surge through. Mm-hmm.
I like the value of the keystones on the tank supports. Mm-hmm. Whether you're going Aftershock Leona, which makes her super tanky with her W on, or just Guardian. I think Guardian is really good. The very finals, I did notice the Guardian Thresh that Mata was playing. Like, it gives him that level of tankiness. And also, if he walks towards you, your only option is to run if he's next to his AD carry. Because if you hit him, he gets the move speed from Guardian, and then he's suddenly in flay range and he CC chains you. So like that type of stuff I thought was really effective, and it really added to the engaged supports, and I think brought them back in a pretty strong way into the meta.
Yeah, it's just pretty interesting to see, you know, their interpretation of what was best. Like I said, Lethal Tempo did get picked some. I actually didn't expect to see
Lethal Tempo
at all. There was also some Lethal Tempo Caitlyn, something that I had not really been seeing. People had kind of almost universally accepted, at least in NA solo queue, that Lethal Tempo is bad and just not really been playing it. Also, just even seeing some of the adjustments in bot lane, we're back to the days of people, when Poke is so heavy, people start going boot starts and long sword starts because they feel that they need more pots to get through lane. So seeing some of those adjustments has been pretty cool. But also, one of the things that most stood out for me is SKT's very weak performance. I mean, SKT almost lost to Griffin, a team that I had never heard of, with five players that I had never heard of. And they were actually losing in all three games, like pretty heavily behind. They ended up barely winning that series. Then they get slammed in the next series. Like, they looked kind of shaky, especially compared to some of the other top teams. You know, people were still judging it as maybe not as serious as like a regular season thing, but still sure. somewhat serious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to give any team the benefit of the doubt based on Kespa Cup. Watching the games, even the final, very much looked like scrims that you get to watch, right? because they're 37 kills to 28 kills. SKT is the type of team that has less off time than any other team in the world. So, like, they also moved on from Peanut. That dude's on Longju now. Hooney wasn't there, right? They're all obviously kind of just seeing how Untara Blank will work mm-hmm. long-term. So, like, it's I like it as a fun tournament to see scrims, but, like, if SKT feeds, if KT wins it,
yeah.
I don't care. And like, KT I'm just watching it for the game. So,
I know. I was waiting for this because you guys got, like, glossing over the KT win.
Doesn't
they
count,
did it.
Man.
It's funny, though, because if you think about it a little bit, too, you kind of see where that would come from, where mm-hmm. this isn't the tournament where people are strategizing very heavily. You know, they're spending
exactly.
weeks on their strategy for this meta and figuring all that stuff out. And
do you think Unsealed Spellbook Vhagar is, like, legit? Or was that just a thing that happened in the tournament?
I my eyes were open to Unsealed Spellbook, actually.
Yeah.
I actually think that it's got a lot of possibilities on many different champions.
I want to try it on junglers. Like, I don't know if it'll work. Like,
AP junglers. I've actually been hearing that it's pretty reasonable. It can allow you to jungle on some champions that you wouldn't otherwise be able to really pull it off.
Yeah.
It's a lower cooldown smite, and then I want to get rid of smite in the late game. If you have, like, a Cho'Gath or a Kalista on the team.
Unlocking champions that are not normally jungle champions isn't always
a good idea.
Sometimes that
you
may
can
be a
do
trap,
it, but
my
maybe
friend.
You shouldn't. But Unsealed Spellbook was really cool. That is another thing that I think mm-hmm. was pretty interesting. We did see some stuff like Kennen and Malzahar support with that because people are prioritizing how low the summoner spell cooldown can get. Because mm-hmm. just from that tree with your 5% talent plus that's 30% off your summoner spell cooldown. Then you can get Lucidity, you're 40% off. So for people who flash engage is really, really big, it makes a lot of sense. And even in some of the other lanes, we're seeing Unsealed Spellbook Malzahar and things like this, where it's like, well, what keystone do you really take? Ares more of a lane priority thing, and Malzahar's mm-hmm. laning is kind of weak. Comet, you don't really have anything to hit confirm that. What do you take on that? Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing with Vhagar. It does end up making quite a bit of sense.
Yeah, I know people always swarm to, the biggest use rates or the biggest win rates mm-hmm. of, talents when things come out and everything's mm-hmm. in flux. People want to go with what they know to be good, right? And usually that's guaranteed damage or that's guaranteed value somewhere. But this, more than pretty much any of the other keystones, maybe Predator, you have to think about how you're using it so much more. Mm-hmm. So the potential of Unsealed Spellbook compared to like the normal use case or the average use you're going to get out of this this mastery or this talent or this, rune. There we go.
Rune.
Third time's the charm. I feel like
runes reforged.
The potential, though, is much higher. I feel like if you're using it intelligently.
I know we were messing around in Solo Queue. You accidentally brought Spellbook Ezreal.
And I actually thought it was really good.
Cleptomancy Ezreal. And then you had Exhaust Barrier against a bunch of assassins. And you're like, this feels amazing.
Yeah, it was actually sick. So I just wasn't really paying attention. I was doing my runes. I was clicking through. I was like, oh, yeah, Cleptomancy, great. I loaded it. I was like, why do I have a book as my mastery? And then I was like, oh, okay. So it was absolutely worthless in lane, I guess, except for once or twice I got dove, I TP'd back to lane. But we're playing against a Zed and a Diana. In late game, I'm like a 40% CDR Ezreal, and I had an exhaust barrier, and I'm just like eating onto the Zed and 1v1ing him. It was pretty strong, actually. So I definitely think it's one of the runes that there's a lot of experimentation that could be done, especially in specific matchups and things like that. You might be able to find really nice advantages.
Yeah, I feel like that's mostly it for Kespa Cup is like mm-hmm. an exploration. Let's move it forward to All-Star. Just really quickly touch on the format. There's two groups. Where they'll do a round robin. The top two from each group will move on to semifinals and then ultimately a final. And there'll be a 1v1 bracket kind of running alongside that each day where the coaches of the teams have actually selected two representatives from each team. So it's a somewhat smaller 1v1 bracket, still has most of the big players in it that we saw from last year, like Uzi, the defending champion. We still have Bjergen Faker that'll be able to come in there. But what are your just initial thoughts on the All-Star rosters and how the tournament's going to play out?
I'm pretty excited. Obviously, this is something that you can't really like do. It is a more serious format and it is teams, playing with only your own region, which is going to make it somewhat more competitive. But at the same time, most of these teams will not be practicing together for it. They'll be practicing, with their own team as scrims are mm-hmm. starting now or on their own and this sort of thing. So it's like, you don't really know what you're going to get as far as team cohesion. But I think it is going to be like a lot on the line almost for fans because there is still going to be pride, even if you kind of know that, oh yeah, it's not really that serious. It's like Rift Rivals. It's like something like those sorts of tournaments where the fans are still going to have a lot of pride in how their teams are doing.
Well, it's also a shift towards being more competitive. I mean, we should slow it down and we should wait for the 1v1 stuff. Let's first talk about the
groups,
the 5-on-5. Yeah, the groups, the more serious oriented part of the tournament here, where yes, the goal is very much, you know, being oriented and being incentivized for these guys to try hard with the all-star coaches as well. I feel like that's a really big part. That kind of hasn't been broadcast as much. Yes, we have kind of, you know, fan voted in all-star groups, but also these all-star coaches, they even, if we go back to step one, got to decide the groups for the beginning of this tournament, which is huge. You know, people talk about not getting out of groups all the time for worlds and stuff. They have a very big influence in the starting groups for both these sides.
Yeah, I know some people were talking about how, oh, Riot placed NA in the easy group. No, LCK was the first seed, and they actually say, okay, which team do you not want to play against? They picked LPL. That placed LPL in the other group. Then LPL gets to pick the team that goes in Korea's group. So the way it worked out is LCK picked LPL. LPL then picked EU, placed them there, and then EU actually gets to draft the next team. So EU then put NA in the other group, and so on as it bounced all the way down the bracket. It was an announcement on LoLesports.com like 4 days ago that I don't expect people to know that, but it is kind of interesting how that's how it ended up playing out with LCK, LPL, EU, NA, and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like Nemesis draft, right? You're giving them the one that you think is the worst for your opponents, kind of try to screw them over type thing. But again, NA, you know, it's in the easy group in a national tournament. I feel like
they advanced.
Yeah, I feel like we've been down this road before. And interestingly enough, it's like four parts of TSM are on the NA All-Star team, basically, with their roster moves. So,
it's pretty funny. Yeah, people keep bringing that up. The off-season was so crazy, and the players that were just added to teams have literally yesterday, I think, was the first day I saw anyone tweeting out about scrims or anything like that. So, you know, yes, there are two more members of TSM that are on this than previous season, but they've had like maybe one day or whatever with the other guys.
I know they've been All-Star, have an LCK player and an NA mid laner. What's going on, man?
Honestly, though, if we're going down and we actually want to evaluate like the strengths of these rosters coming in, because as you talked about, a lot of this is going to be down to the coordination within these teams. Who can actually buckle down the quickest and work out a strategy for this meta, and who is going to be able to work together the best? Korea, we talked about already. They already played a tournament. Yes, it wasn't this team all on the same team, but they were in a competitive environment with five players, you know, coming up with strategies for this patch. So I feel like not only is Korea the strongest region, not only did they send almost top players in every single role, maybe people would say ambition and score would be swapped there.
Yeah.
But they also have already played like a whole tournament on this patch. So if it wasn't a no-brainer before, you know, Korea, congratulations on your...
And I think their team as well, as much as we talk about like all-star teams being a bunch of... everyone shines in the role, most popular. Like, it also works for that. Like, Prey and Gorilla are great at just being a two-man lane if Ambition wants to show his attention elsewhere. They're not a resource-heavy bot lane in any way. Cuvée was the type of top laner who could play any style as well. Like, they actually have everything you would want. Like, I think Kobe had a slide during this or that, like an all-star team or KT. I think this would be, like, the perfect team. The personalities even match. I would be shocked if they, like, lose anything.
I mean, unless they're going completely off the rails and doing total troll picks, right?
If they want to.
You don't really know what you're going to get.
Like, five unsealed spell books, everyone's smite level one, something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, you could do something pretty wacky, so we'll see what they want to actually show us. But I do think that although you're not going to have, like, a full five-man team, I do think it's an advantage to have teammates, especially if it's, like, a jungler plus a solo laner. I actually do think that's a pretty big advantage if that's someone that you're used to playing with, because you can just play heavily around that, and the other team's not going to be necessarily all on the same page. That's something that you can use to your advantage. So I do think, although, you know, TSM hasn't been screaming for a while, I know Bjergsen and Mike Young are doing a fair bit and that sort of thing, and if you have some synergy going there, then you can use that as an advantage over some of the opponents who aren't as used to playing together. Just like, mm-hmm. you know, Kuvei and Ambition, that's going to be an advantage. And the bot lane together from Longju, that's going to be an advantage. Those sorts of things do make a big difference.
Good transition. Let's move over to the strength of this NA roster, then, Isdale. Talk about that synergy. Sneaky and Aphromoo play together all the time, duo.
All the time.
And they're completely serious, by the way, the entire time that they're,
yeah, uh-huh.
they're covering these
it's
strategies.
A beautiful synergy.
But one of the big things, as well as, oh yeah, will they have 5-on-5 strategies and will they be able to coordinate, is kind of who are the most ingenious of the players? Who are the ones that like to try new strategies the quickest? Sneaky has always been one of the guys that grinds on new patches the mm-hmm. quickest and is one of the first to be feared on the new champions because, mm-hmm. you know, the balance team usually likes to make new champions on the stronger side so that people kind of compensate a little bit for not knowing anything about the champion.
Mm-hmm.
And Sneaky puts a bunch of time always into immediately on the new champions. Unfortunately, he can't play Zoe as an AD carry, but I've seen Bjergsen's been playing a ton of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what players do you guys think among basically any of these teams, I guess? Because,
okay.
you know, Soaz is there for Europe as well, and he's definitely in that boat. But what are the players that really stand out to you that you think are going to bring, like, some new, you know, crazy NCAA spellbook stuff or
Levi.
Strategies like that? Oh,
yeah.
Good answer.
From the GPL, Levi. The GPL obviously doesn't look like a super strong roster, but they have Tinikun, the coach. They still have Levi, and they still have Noway from the Gigabyte Marines. He's going to bring, I feel like he'll bring out something innovative in the jungle that could potentially take a bunch of farm. I don't know what that is yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just one of the Electrocute or Dark Harvest one-shot builds.
I was going to say, I mean, he showed us a lot of Kane. I've been seeing so much Kane lately, and people are playing Dark Harvest Kane and this sort of thing. That, like, if you're going to be farm hungry, that mastery
That's basic, man, though. I want some crazy stuff.
I mean, I think if...
How crazy to get you one-shot a boy? Like, you don't need to do much more.
I mean, that sounds pretty good
to
me.
No need for innovation at that point.
I'm looking at MLXG because he's someone who's never been afraid of kind of, you know, mixing it up. He has really high highs. He has really low lows. But, like, he's a guy who loves to try a cheesy pass. He loves to try a very aggressive pathing and stuff. And if you can figure something out that your opponent's maybe not actually seen before or maybe not expecting, and then you do some crazy invades or you do some sort of crazy pre-planned strategy, mm-hmm. that could be really effective. And I mean, there is still a lot of pride on the line. And I think everyone would love to be the team that at least takes some games off of the LCK team. So I could see people trying to build up or prepare a special strategy if they're going to go up against them. And I could see MLXG being one of the guys who bust something out.
Yeah. I wonder how Power of Evil would perform in this tournament a little bit too, because he already does like Nashor's Tooth Ori, and he's a very theorycraft based mid laner. And I do wonder how the whether you want to call it self-imposed or self-created Reddit drama will influence the way he plays here, as he kind of tried to tackle like the EU fan base and his justification for moving to NA, like his last hurrah as an EU LCS
mid laner.
That post was
rough.
Did he write that? Or did someone write it?
It's posted on his account. Maybe someone wrote it for him. But to me, like that, this is kind of a rabbit hole. Maybe we're going down a little bit, but like,
it's fine.
I feel like, you know, I did see some talk on Twitter and stuff like, oh, he probably didn't write that. He's like social media manager or something. But then you're choosing to have that person do that for you, which is just as bad, right? Like, if you hired someone to do this for you and they're awful, then that's just as much your fault. Like, there's no real excusing it. Like, you either did it yourself or you paid someone to make that post, which is probably even worse.
It's his, just to double check. Like, I never actually double checked. I checked his Twitter. Sorry, had to delete the tweet about my Reddit thread. Thanks for pointing it out. I could actually sympathize with him like wanting to justify his actions because he had like the EUNA stuff in there, but I do feel like he created a little bit more trouble than he needed to. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those situations where like you just let your play speak for yourself and just have added the EU All-Stars and play and be friends with all the dudes. But I'm interested to see if that manifests at all at All-Star, right? Like if he tries extra hard, if he wants to pull out like a new special build, it's going to be cool to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I actually didn't read the poster or much. I wasn't really interested in the drama.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like in those types of scenarios, if someone's just like, you know what? I got a lot of money to do this, so I went to NA. Then I'm like, I understand.
Yeah.
I might still be a little bit, hold a little bit of a grudge, but I'd be like, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a mix of things. He was more just like, EUNA doesn't matter because Korea is going to smash everyone anyway. Like, the roster I'm joining, like, I also joined to win. And people were like, no, man, you joined for the money. Like, there was a lot of, like, bickering of arguments that I don't think you really want to get involved in.
That's what I was going to say. It's arguments that you can't win. Sometimes you kind of just have to realize that there's nothing you can't.
Yeah.
You're not going to actually change people's opinions.
You're going to have your opinion.
Very strongly about something can be kind of a rough conversation to take, and I don't think it was handled very well, so it kind of made it into something bigger than it already was. But
how do you think their team is going to do overall then?
I think it'll be fine.
I mean, I think they have a strong team. Like, it's Soaz, Jankos, Power of Evil, Reckless, and Ignar. And just looking at the group, so Group A is LMS, EU, Turkey, and Korea, and you certainly expect Europe to be in the top two to make it out of that group, and then, you know, assuming they're getting second, right? You're looking at Group B, that is Southeast Asia, Brazil, China, and North America. You're expecting China to be the clear number one from there. Mm-hmm. And then I think that is kind of the question for you is going to be, okay, well, if you make it out and China gets first as expected, how do you actually do in that sort of a matchup? Because that's going to be a really strong team, and that's where you're expecting like a powerhouse team like that to really be challenged.
I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that EU can take down.
No, not at all.
Like, we have no idea what level of seriousness and what level of showmanship these guys are going to decide to bring to this tournament. And I believe it's a best of three semifinal. Like, you can definitely see EU making it. NA making it to finals is a little bit more of a long shot, unless they were the number one seed in that group and then they got to play like EU in semifinals. But that's as deep as my analysis goes for this stuff, right? Like, the LPL team, I feel like, is... We don't talk about it that much because the English broadcast for LPL doesn't really get the same level of exposure as, you know, LCK, EU, or NA. But those guys are bigger stars than anyone else, really, who plays League outside of Faker.
I mean,
within China, like, the way they get mobbed with fans and just how much money is in their league, like, if there's a team that's just not going to care about as much and have fun, like, it's going to be the LPL. So that team has... I think the most variance of who's going to be like the best versus not do that.
At the same time, their fans are brutal, man. Like, they have a lot of accountability to the fans.
Well, it's because there's so many. So, like, there's that one dude at the end of the spectrum, suddenly 100 people.
So there's a little bit of...
Also,
kind of
I saw tweets already that they were practicing together and tryharding. So,
really?
Yeah, so I'm not sure.
And that was like Rift Rivals, right?
You know, we heard the same thing.
They did really well at Rift Rivals.
At Rift Rivals, all the coaches from LPL were working together. They were strategizing. The coaches from these, like, they took it very seriously to try to beat LCK. They strategized which team would be the best matchup for every LCK team. They put a lot of effort into it. So they are, you know, at least based on Rift Rivals, having a lot of pride about it. And I do think that their region has a ton of pride in general. And because, like you said, it's by far the biggest region. The player base is massive in China. The fan support is massive. Mm-hmm. And these guys do have a lot of pride. I mean, Uzi is one of the guys who took 1v1 super serious last year. He's the reigning champion there. I'm sure even if it's just LSARS, wherever you could beat Korea, you want to try to beat Korea, right? Like, a win is a win is a win.
All right, you guys sold me.
Yeah.
LPL.
LPL, baby.
Clear number
Let's
two.
Let's go.
Let's go back to your step one, though, of Europe getting out of the group. I feel like one of the reasons why some of the European fans were, unhappy about how the groups shaked out, LMS is not, you know, that's no joke. The LMS All-Star team is probably the big difference between these two groups. And it's Europe, I feel like, you know, that's a pretty strong opponent. So they might not even have a hard time getting past that squad. I mean, that is...
It's Ziv, Karsa, Fofo, Bebe, Sword Art, and the coach is Stake.
Yeah, so...
It's definitely a really strong roster, and it's a lot of recognizable names, but, you know, LMS has been struggling for a while internationally. You know, their trajectory kind of has been going down, so we'll see. I definitely think EU would certainly be favored above it, but it's, as you said, it's not like this is a full five-man EU roster that's been practicing together all year versus another one, so there's way more variability, and it comes down to, I think, individual performance, which is kind of what All-Stars is celebrating anyway. It's like, we're not celebrating necessarily this team of five players. We're celebrating five great individual players, and one of the other reasons that I really do like All-Stars is the 1v1. Which I think is going to be pretty exciting because that is kind of the fun mode, so to speak, or whatever this year. But I think people have actually a ton of pride in the 1v1s because it's something where, you know, there's no one else to blame it on, right? Like, there's no teammate, there's no excuse. It's all
well,
you.
Well, the excuse is this is 1v1 and you got a cheesy Caitlyn pick or something like that. You know,
this band,
there's
bro,
like
the band
a couple of picks that always come out and you're just like, ah, you abuse X cheesy something yeah. something. So I feel like that's where a lot of it is brushed off. Or you have like a Faker Froggen zillion matches,
that's
or
true,
was
yeah,
that
yeah.
Afremu or something like that?
That was
like,
it was both. Froggen
yeah,
like
he
convinced
he
everyone.
Tricked everyone. Yeah, he got these yeah. mind games.
He did the CSing versus Afremu, where it was I think it was zillion yeah. zillion with no items, no runes.
Uh-huh.
Masteries.
Who can get the most
who
CS?
Who can get the most CS? And then he got Faker to do the Froggen,
Anivia,
the Froggen special, the Anivia versus Anivia battle. So Froggen, there's some mind games going on there, but the coaches actually chose the players who go into the 1v1.
Yeah, not everyone plays. Two per team.
Yeah, two per team. So for Korea, it's Faker and Prey. China, it's Uzi and Mako. EU, Reckless and Power of Evil. NA is Bjergsen Sneaky. LMS, Fofo Sword Art. It's Frozen and Zeitnot from the TCL. Gnarl and Levi from the GPL. And Vert and BRTT from CBLOL. So a lot of big stars, yeah. and I am pretty excited to see what people have figured out. I could see something, you know, there's backing and
yeah.
stuff in this mode and you can buy, so maybe like something like Unsealed Spell could be kind of interesting if you could just, you know, all in right away with double summoners and then you have the super short summoner cooldown if you could do something like that. I don't know. There could be some interesting strategies that come
yeah.
out. Because I know in the past we've seen a lot of stuff like even like grasp on 80 carries and defensive masteries and
mm-hmm,
these sorts of
mm-hmm.
things to try to kind of like outlast in 1v1. So I'm really excited to see what these guys have actually
yeah.
theory crafted.
And the meta, so to speak, is even less developed because
yeah.
I remember in past All-Stars, they would do the 1v1 tournament in the like IWC All-Stars, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Kira innovated all of it, I believe. 2 years ago, it was like grasp on 80 carries is exactly when it started. And then everyone knew that by the time they got here. So
yep.
now with like a shortened bracket, only two players from every team, if it turns out like grasp Varus just beats everyone and stuff like that, and one guy figures it out, he'll win, knock Faker out of the tournament, and then keep going on. I still want, and we'll see how competitive this one is and how derpy it is, and you can make the excuse that 1v1 is competitive. I want 1v1 to be a larger part of our game. Like,
yeah.
I really love...
You have to be balanced around that, then.
I don't think so.
Really?
Not really. So I just want it to be a tiebreaker in certain scenarios. Like, instead of breaking a tiebreaker off of, like, average win time, be like, nah, man, 1v1.
So...
Takes 10 minutes.
In theory...
It's like shootout,
in
right?
theory, I like it. However, how much time are you going to then... have divert from your practice to practice 1v1 tiebreakers, because that's actually important.
So
then I'm like, okay, Bjergsen, you are always are going to be our 1v1 player. So we're going to do our two blocks of scrims today or whatever, and then you're going to have 3 hours of 1v1 practice with the coach trying to figure out some
yeah.
To be fair, though, that's similar to how it is in pro sports. There's actually shootout specialists in hockey, for example, right? Like guys who are not necessarily the biggest star, but are just really good at shootouts because they practice it, and you can't have guys coming in for that. And the other thing is, it doesn't have to be like a series deciding thing, right? You know, you talk about okay, like maybe it's
a tiebreaker. If it's a tiebreaker, that
could
be super
it could be
important.
It could be cool if it's like, you know, deciding which team starts on which side, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you start red side or blue side, and it's based on a 1v1, things like that could be fun. But there are, you know, there is precedent in other sports. Obviously, there was in Korea for a long time. LCK had blind pick game fives, right?
Mm-hmm.
The game was not balanced at all around that, but that was a big part of their format. OGN has done that in other games as well. They actually used to do that for a while where they had it would rotate between 3v3s, which was the competitive format, and then 1v1s and stuff. So they've done it in different games. It could be kind of cool if it came out, but I could definitely see there'd be a lot of frustration probably around it if it dictated too much of what happened in the game.
Did you guys ever watch the XFL?
I did.
Yeah.
It's like, do you remember the way instead of
game.
A coin toss? So their idea, instead of doing a coin toss, was to start guys like 20 yards away with the ball in the middle, and then you'd like race and die for it. The first game, a guy broke his collarbone.
Oh, God.
Because they literally, they're like, all right, that was a bad idea. They're going to both start from the same 20-yard line and not collide in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think that would actually still be good if they wanted to do it in the
yeah,
NFL,
yeah.
but... the coin toss is just like so ingrained.
Very few listeners, I feel like, are going to know what you're talking about. Because
I feel like I described it, right? You go for the ball.
No, I mean, XFL,
it.
I feel like very few people are going to know what the XFL was.
It was an attempted competitor to the NFL in the American
Arena football.
Well, arena football is a whole other league. That's just football in a really small, like it's like a basketball court.
Yeah.
And there's walls. Really weird. It's where Kurt Warner got a start.
There you go.
That's it.
Today.
What were we supposed to be on right
now? We're talking about 1v1s.
Oh, yeah. I think Uzi goes in as the strong favorite only because of the way he won 1v1s last year, going mid laner versus mid laner against mids, winning, then also winning the AD carry matchups. It's super variant. Like, it's 1v1s. Anything could happen. But I have a hard time thinking anyone has a better chance than Uzi.
Well, Bjergsen won 2 years ago. Uzi won last year. I mean, you got to always think that Faker has got to be
a favorite, right? Is this the year he tries because he's not a world champion?
Maybe.
He's like,
maybe.
I need this title.
That would be interesting if he comes in super serious, right? He's just giving them the death stare and stuff. They're like, Faker won Anivia versus Nevi. He's like, sure. And then he locks in a counter pick and stuff. It'll be pretty interesting to see how serious they take it. But a lot of favorites as well. People are always excited to see guys like Reckless in there. So I think it's going to be really fun. And Bjergsen versus Faker could actually, based on the bracket, be a very early matchup because their second round, if they both win, they'd play each other. So that could be a pretty big one.
How do you guys like the patch?
It's been good. I actually love preseason. I've been having a lot of fun with all the new runes, experimenting, playing different roles, playing different champions in those roles and stuff. And I've been having a lot of fun. Like, I'm actually really, really enjoying Predator a lot. I've been still having a ton of fun with that. I feel like, speaking of Unsealed Spellbook and you're talking about variance in power, right? Like, if you use Predator poorly, it's actually worthless. It does nothing for you. If you're trying to channel it in combat, it just gets interrupted. It wastes the cooldown. Mm-hmm. But as far as like early game power that it gives you and snowballing power, it feels so strong because you're able to actually like pull off some of these ganks that you wouldn't otherwise be able to. It's almost working like a ghost, right? And if you have like early Chilling
better.
Smite and because it gives you damage too. And if you have an early Chilling Smite and early Boots, 950 gold, your first base, you buy a Boots, you buy a Chilling Smite, you get out there and your Predator gank feels very, very powerful. And if you can make those early ganks work, it's really good. But I do feel like it's a lot about setting the pace of the game because it's channeled, because your things kind of have to be premeditated for it to be pulled off. There's a lot of skill in how you use it and variance in how powerful it can be, but I've been really having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I always really enjoy the preseason. Mm-hmm. My only gripe is I wish that the ranked next season would come out sooner so I can abuse stuff quicker.
You're like, I already know what's OP.
I figure out immediately what I want to do in the jungle, what I feel like is the strongest, and then I'm like,
what is the strongest?
How long until everyone else is gonna figure
it's
it out?
Orn.
I want to abuse now. Yeah. I mean, the ban list right now that you should have is Ornn, Zoe, and Ezreal for sure. Mm-hmm. If you guys don't have those banned on your team,
I think Malzahar too. Malzahar is pretty rough.
It's going to be rough.
I banned Sona.
Kha'Zix, Zinn. I've been seeing a lot of bans on those.
No. You want to play the Zinn.
That's you want to play the Zinn. Okay.
Actually, that one's not secret anymore. At least in NA, Zinn, everybody's just pick banned.
Yeah.
We actually haven't gotten much time to talk about just the Runes Reforged system because last week we did the free agency episode. I really like it. And I don't know if it's going to be one of these things that gets old with time and then I'm going to be sad that there's like these imbalanced runes or not that many options. But I've already kind of gone away from the pre-made Rune and Mastery page that I used to try and do. Like I'd spend
even
like
if
2 hours.
Changes back to
yeah, I'd point. Spend like 2 hours in a dungeon, like making all of these runes and mastery pages for the 20 champions I wanted to be ready for. And like, then I go into a game and pick a different champion. I'd be scrambling. Like now I make my page every single game.
Yeah.
I have to make 6 choices. They're super simple. I've already done a lot of thought into like each ones. And because I put that thought in, I just have a page for literally every champion and every matchup that I feel good about because there's actually a lot of, obviously I take Celerity way more than all the other stuff. Like I find a way to get sorcery as my primary or my secondary. Like if I'm on a tank, I take Demolish because I think it's kind of OP compared to the other things. It's amazing turret destruction. But just the way the system empowers me to play a bunch of new champions and I think is just really nimble in how quickly I can craft a page for a new champion, I really, really like.
Yeah, I mean, although like the current states of some of them or the values of something may change or may get stale, I think the systemic switch was a huge win.
Yeah.
Because even we have tons of IP from playing the game for so long and we have a lot of freedom. Even on us, we like struggle sometimes on our Smurfs, not have the right rune setups for ex-champion and you get autofilled to AD carry and I'm like, oh, I don't have any AD carry rune and now I got to play autofill and I don't have a good rune setup. Like it takes away so much busy work. You don't have to go to your dungeon anymore, Jet. It's you're free.
You're free.
Man, woo! Out.
All right.
No more caster cage for Jet.
So I think most people are actually really happy with it. Mm-hmm. Plus, I feel like even the individuals, like the exact values and the designs for a lot of them are pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, neat things that have been introduced and still haven't been figured out yet.
My only real gripe with it, and this was not something that's an issue now, but because I've played a lot, right? Like I'm almost low 50 or whatever. I always do my math.
Floating over here.
Yeah, yeah. You know me.
Look at me winning the day on ARAMs all the time. Exactly. Getting level 50.
But like I always did the one page thing because for me it was more just like sometimes I would forget to change my page. So if I only had one, I always set it for every time and then I would never forget. Yeah. And it forced me to kind of learn all the masteries. I did it with the old system. I did it with the new system. But coming into the new system, I did not do a lot of research before I started playing. I did not really like go over and theorycraft any pages. I didn't do any of that stuff. So I just logged on. I started playing. And the thing that I find the most annoying with it when you're new or if you're a casual player is you cannot compare all the runes at once, right? Like I can't pull up my sorcery and my inspiration and my resolve and my this and my that, right? Like and domination and so on. And whereas with the old system, I have my three trees. I'm like, do I want this? Okay, what does that give me? Okay, let me mouse over this. Okay, give me that. You know, with this, the problem at the start was I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, comet sounds pretty cool. What were my options? Okay, I'll go to precision. And then I look at precision and then I'm like, okay, well, what was the second one in sorcery? Yeah. How do I compare that to this? I can't remember. Now I got to change that. And even if I'm settled on my secondary tree, I change my first tree, then my secondary tree goes away too. So that's the one thing I think that they maybe could use some work is just the, as far as UX, if I could see them all represented at once, it'd be easier to compare.
At least have an option to do
so. For veteran players and for people who play a lot, it's not going to be an issue anymore because you're going to learn them all and then you're going to generally know what your actual choices are. But when you're starting out, I found that tough because I like to min-max. I like to feel like I'm making the right choices. And a lot of times I'm just like, oh crap, I'm out of time. I just got to click something. But besides that, I've been loving it. I've been loving the variety. It does feel like, especially in the jungle, I've talked about this, maybe I talked about this last week, but especially in the jungle, I feel like there are a lot of options. Some of the roles and some of the champions, I do feel like, it's more limited. But in jungle, I feel like there's some champions where you can take so many different things, like Electrocute is good on some stuff, Dark Harvest is good, Predator is good. You can go press the attack. You can go all kinds of different stuff out of the jungle and feel pretty good about it.
Pick out something specific.
Yeah, I got one.
Okay. What you got?
So maybe this is kind of just a question for you two. You have a second to think about it. What's the like coolest thing that you felt like you've been able to do because of the new runes that you've been liking to do? So personally, one of the funnest things that I've done in League is trying to play non-standard bot lanes, double melee, either double tank lanes or kill lanes. Back in season one, it was Alistar Sion, when it was like that old dumb Sion that had a point and shoot stun and then the blow up shield, right?
Yeah,
like,
Moby boots run around the map.
Alistar Sion.
Why you got calm done, man? That was one of my first mains.
Yeah, me too. So easy. Had two skills. But like that lane was awesome. Back with the old Alistar, where his pulverize was 2.5 seconds. Like you'd headbutt them against the wall. It was 1 second stun. You'd pulverize them. It was another 3 seconds. Sion would then stun for another 2 seconds. You'd blow them up. Like literally everyone was one shot. That lane was super good. Then it was like Maokai Darius when Maokai had the long-range engage. I was not able to do those for like the past 2 years with the old Rune of Mastery systems, but I feel like it's actually kind of becoming good again with Guardian and Aftershock. Specifically, if you want to run a double Guardian tank lane, Guardian doesn't double proc, which is really cool. If two people have Guardian and they're standing next to each other, you get hit. Only one Guardian procs. You both get the move speed. As soon as that shield is done, the next Guardian procs. You get more of the move speed. So it makes you really resilient in lane. It makes your all-in really good because if they try and fight back, you get more of the move speed back. You both bring Demolish. So if you ever do get the kill on them, you take half of their turret because the more people that have Demolish, the faster the timer goes down, which I don't know if that's a bug, but I love it. Because when you have like a top lane or something and you demolish a turret in like a second and a half, it's super effective. As far as what you play, you can do Alistar Sion again. The combo is just a lot different. You E a minion through to get the slow. That allows Alistar to catch up. He headbutt pulverizes. That buys enough time for Sion to get his Q, which buys enough time for Alistar's E to reach max stacks and stun again. And it's a really good kill lane, as well as transitioning into, you know, double tank, double Targons. You get a bunch of gold efficiency. So that's the fun thing that I'm going to keep trying to experiment with.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage other people to do the same so I don't get flamed if they don't like not having ADC.
I mean, you could, if you're being, you know, more kind of thoughtful about it too, like you could have a quirky mid. You can have people who can kind of fill those roles. You could have a Kindred jungle and you can have things that can kind of fill some of those roles.
Five-man teams, I can't wait to try.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
In solo queue, like tanks are so hard to get. Ornn, he's banned. And then everyone just wants to play damage dealers like Wukong one shot in the top lane and Corki mid and Kindred jungle. You can actually run that and get both your tanks from the bottom lane who have a pretty good gold income thanks to double relic shield. And I think the team actually works amazingly.
Yeah.
I just got to get on there and do it.
It's definitely pretty interesting. I think Demolish is actually a really cool one to talk about, especially coming from the bot lane, because I've been seeing a lot of stuff where it's like you can play Alistar and just roam mid and like, you know, you threaten gank, you come flash on the mid lane, they flash away and they just walk up the turret and you just smack it with Demolish. Like, these sorts of things, just showing up to a lane and using Demolish on a turret, can actually chunk it pretty heavily. And especially, you know, I've seen that against, or had it happen to me even, you know, playing, I've been playing a fair bit of Kassadin lately. And because you don't have very good wave clear, people show up to your lane, it can be very hard to actually push them back. And things like that can allow people to take the turrets very, very quickly, you know, which we could see coming through in competitive as well. But
what's your thing?
I've been playing a lot of Shen support. I actually think is really fun. I just think that Aftershock actually allows you to have much more reasonable trades in the early game. And I think that the added move speed on like magical boots is actually such a big thing for a lot of the melee champions. And like having the 10 additional move speed, I mean, if you can get those boots, you can roam around. Like, the move speed is a big deal. But I do think that the masteries are allowing a lot more of these melee supports to be pretty successful. And I actually think Shen support is pretty strong with them.
I mean, Demolish, you guys make a really good argument. It's going to be great for competitive. You know, there's a lot of possibilities with this for strategy, coordinating with five members. But for me, the funnest thing is always just pooping on someone, 100% them.
Dark Harvest, Electrocute?
No, just stop. I'm in the middle of it. Well, there's two things. I got autofilled to AD carry, which is notoriously my worst lane.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, they played, you know, Misfortune in Kespa Cup. I'll just pick that with Comet. And I did that, and we killed them at level one, at level two, and at level four. So, like, taking lethality AD carries being back with Comet, as long as you have some sort of support to slow them in it, like, it is insane the amount of damage you can do. I really love burst damage. So that was super fun, especially being in an off roll, like being auto-filled and being able to like carry and have a huge impact. As far as the jungle though, I'm just abusing Xin Zhao right now, which everyone knows is extremely strong with Press the Attack, but Kha'Zix with Electrocute. Electrocute is basically Thunder Lords on steroids. Mm-hmm. The cooldown doesn't matter for me because I'm a jungler. Mm-hmm. So it just basically means my gank, I can actually 100% people so incredibly often. And I just think that Kha'Zix right now is so strong with everyone, as you said, wanting to one-shot people. It's basically the best assassin wins. Like, the game turns, to me, much more into tracking the enemy jungler, vision control, and stuff like this, because you know, the mechanics of assassinating someone are actually not very difficult.
Yeah.
I just jump out of auto-queue.
Whoa.
My electrocute goes off, boom, they're dead. Yeah. So to me, it's so much more about, you know, I'm tracking the enemy jungler. I'm actually counter-jungling for once because I think they actually nerfed. Actually, this may be a
catch-up experience was diminished.
This might just be a completely different topic.
Yeah.
But I think they over-nerfed catch-up experience because you can absolutely destroy someone. You can make the enemy jungler have no fun at all the entire game, and you feel bad because the enemy team is going to be flaming them, but you know, that's too bad for you. But counter jungling right now is insane because if you get that first kill, you can starve them of experience really easily.
I also think it's really risky doing some of the like the early ganks, right? Like, if you're doing like a red buff into a gank or something like that and it fails and you lose the other half of the jungle, you can all of a sudden end up 2-3 levels behind
and
they're just farming your jungle the whole game.
It brings back, which is something that was kind of missed last season, where a lot of people were complaining about, you know, this debate between, do I want to be a power farmer? You know, what am I giving up by going for ganks if I can then return to my jungle? And people didn't quite understand that system.
Right.
And they were overblowing that at the time because you actually had to, you know, clear your camps first time to get them to reset the level first. It wasn't just, oh, you go back and you clear your level.
Instantly
your
get level higher level.
Raptors and you're instantly better. But it may have swung a little bit far the other way. I do feel like there's so much control that you can have from the jungle while also not being the biggest threat in the game. You know, unless I get, you know, super fed, the solo laners are still incredibly, you know, powerful. So I've been tending to play around the mid lane and you know, hope that I have a mid lane main.
You know, especially how I can beat your Electrocute Kha'Zix? Two tanks in the bot lane.
I will kill you instantly.
Or you can be on our team. We CC him for 6 seconds, and then you come and
get
kills.
All right, let's do that. Let's do
yeah.
that. Yeah. I'll just come get all the kills off your lane.
I'm surprised you haven't been playing any Nocturne. You're talking about wanting to one-shot people. You got to get in there.
Nocturne is one-dimensional. See, you're like at the baby steps. You're like, ooh, cool. I one-shot somebody. That's real fun. Kha'Zix, you can one-shot all five people. Graduate to this level.
Yeah, but can you one-shot them from across the whole map and have them rage in chat as much?
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. definitely been enjoying preseason a lot. And there does feel like there's a lot of diversity. I know the one thing that people are complaining about quite a bit in top lane is top lane right now. You know, a lot of people feel like a lot of champions that used to work quite well, especially with Fervor, are not so hot right now. It doesn't feel like there's really a great kind of thing that has filled that void. Plus just how powerful some of the few champions that are really S tier in top lane, like
Ornn.
If you're not going to ban Ornn, well, you can't play a melee champion. But also if you ban Ornn and then you pick a melee champion and they pick Teemo, well, you also can't play that. So there's some things like that if people are playing the really abusive stuff in top lane that can be super frustrating. But I know Ornn is going to get some nerfs. I don't know if Teemo is really going to get anything. I guess the Airy change did kind of help a bit with that.
Right. Do you want to talk quickly about the patch? Because we're filming this on Tuesday afternoon, so 12:05 at about 4 o'clock. So what jumps out to you in patch 7.24?
We should talk about Zoe. Because on this or that, you said you had this theory that Zoe peaks in platinum
or
falls off.
And falls off the higher that
you go. That's what you said.
I said it could happen. So, but here's the theory. So, like, in the few games I've played as Zoe and the few games I've played against Zoe, when I was Zoe, like, I land the sleep over wall, which is something that, like, I can do with my low diamond mid lane mechanics or mid plat mid lane mechanics, whatever they are, and, like, managing the Q shoot backwards into forward 2,500 units away are things I could follow, right? But when I'm laning against Zoe, I'm just like chilling in lane, trying to CS and do a trading pattern, and this Q comes out of nowhere and smacks me, right? I feel like the better you get, the better you are at tracking the skill shots, whereas like the execution of actually using her skills is something that I can do. Like a few games, I'm going to learn how to play Zoe. But actually playing against Zoe, I feel like is actually much harder, which is why I wonder if there's a place where a really good player or like a pro team says, oh, that guy slept. I'm going to stand in front of this queue and actually tank it. When her numbers are more reasonable. Because I think right now her numbers are at a point where it doesn't matter.
Yeah, my problem with your argument is there's a big difference for me between something being very difficult and and it having greater skill expression. You're like, okay, it's harder to dodge, you know, than it is for Zoe to learn her combo. But you know, things can be very difficult without the skill expression. Like if you want to bench press 300 pounds,
okay,
that's extremely difficult.
Yeah,
but where's the skill? It's not really a challenger player is not gonna, you know, the skill expression isn't necessarily there. Like a very difficult task, it isn't actually gonna have isn't always you know gonna have have that big of a difference there.
Well,
so one of the things that you can do with Zoe as well, I feel like there's a lot of options when you're the ones with the Zoe in your hands. Mm-hmm. You can actually start your Q backwards and like to gain the distance or whatever.
Yep.
And then use your ultimate and fire your E to cut off an avenue of escape to force them in a direction, right?
Right.
So like there's more levels of the mind game where that you can control. And I feel like there's if there's more dynamic parts for that you can control, then that's where the skill expression comes from.
Right.
Rather than one single part being super difficult and not having like as much skill expression. Because like dodging is super difficult, but it depends on your move speed and like how many dashes you have, you know, and the level of mind games. And that's really it. It's not like super, super heavy.
Because I know it would be a buzzword. Like I hear what you're saying. So much of it does come down to counterplay. And is there enough counterplay playing against Zoe, or is there not?
Yeah.
Because the better the player, the more they're going to be able to abuse your counterplay, and the best pro picks are ultimately the ones without counterplay. That's why I feel like Ryze has always been so good in pro and has such a bad win rate in solo queue. Because he just clicks you, you stop moving, then he hits you with his skill shots. No matter how good you are, you're not avoiding that, right? But Zoe, because she has so many skill shots, right, are they avoidable? Is going to be ultimately the question that answers whether or not she is, you know, easier to play against at the highest level. Is standing in front of the skill shot actually counterplay, right? Yeah. Is knowing,
I mean, it is counterplay, but
is it,
it still has a huge cost.
Yeah.
And I would,
cost so great that it's actually not counterplay because you're still making a bad move because you're trying to dodge Zoe?
I would also say there's so many parts of it that do make it, like, as far as skill progression. So you're talking about, like, landing the skill shots, but I also think a lot about using the ultimate, right? And usually when I see people fall flat, it's actually through poor use of the ultimate in team fights. It's through, you know, they are forward in a place where you're going to catch up where they're going to are back to very quickly. Like, you can place a trap on it now. You can cast your skill shot on that, these sorts of things. And I think that I have played against some players. Like, I played against some guy who was like a high master Zoe guy, and he was playing it very well. He had obviously been playing the champion a lot.
Yeah.
And just the difference I felt between him and some of the others was just in, like, dodging skill shots very effectively with his ultimate, you know, like dodging a Sejuani ult, dodging things like this, like being able to basically avoid those completely without the use of a flash, I thought made a huge difference. And also the angles at which you can harass, you know, most people I hear talk about Zoe and Lane, well, you just stand behind the minions, but people can, like, bell cause this. Exactly. Yeah. Like, they can be bouncing it around, they can find different angles. And to me, like, there is more counterplay, obviously, like, when you're really good at dodging, but you have to just look back at, like, when Nidalee was really overpowered. Yes, of course, you could dodge the spear, but there was a reason it was still in pro play as well, because people, as you say, are better at predicting where you're going to go, at cutting off, at using angles, and being able to hit those skill shots too. Plus, like, the biggest thing for me with Zoe is just the sleep is just way too good, right? The sleep can be shot from literally off your screen through walls. You cannot QSS when you get hit by the drowsy. You have to wait till the actual sleep lands. The drowsy is slowing you down and messing you up in the team fight anyway.
That part's really huge.
You cannot McHale's the drowsy. You cannot Black Shield once the drowsy's on. Like, all these things are super frustrating, because when you think about 80 carries in pro play, it's Captain Jack QSS. You instantly do it. You instantly continue moving. That's how you continue to hide out. This gives you like a 2-second window where you cannot do that, where you're slowed down and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and I hate this champion so much, just mainly because I'm probably, you know, junglers have a very difficult time, because she is extremely strong in the jungle. If you fire the sleepy bubble trouble,
it's like always going to hit you through a wall in the jungle.
Right? Not only does it go super far through walls, but then it can actually plop in the middle of one of those corridors and I don't care, you know, how skilled you are, whatever, you're not getting past that sucker. Like, it's filling up the entire pathway, and it's just very frustrating to play against.
Even trying to gank her on a lot of champions, if you do not have some sort of a gap close, like, some champions can deal with it, but, like, if you're playing a pretty binary champion, you just run in, it's like almost feels like trying to gank a Morgana or something, but even harder to avoid the sleep, right? Like, you come in from a side brush and she just kind of throws the sleep at you. It can be very difficult unless you're trying to flash over or to do something like that.
I am glad, though, that she doesn't have a ridiculous mobility herself.
Yeah.
Like, the ultimate, the first couple of times, you get super confused.
But you, once you realize she's just going to be in that spot.
Once you see it a couple of times, then you're like, okay, she's immediately coming. Like, it becomes very predictable, and she doesn't have, you know, actual dashes to escape. So maybe that is somewhere where we start to see people just camping her super hard and trying to take advantage of that. But also,
there are some good matchups, too.
Yeah, I mean, Bjergsen's been playing it a lot on stream in the last couple of days, and he keeps one-shotting Challenger players, so, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, also, like,
there are definitely ways to beat it, though. Like, I think it's, to me, it feels more annoying than overpowered, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it's yes, it can one-shot you and stuff, but I feel like I almost always win against Zoe. It's just that I'm super frustrated, even if I am winning. Like, like, I play a lot of Cass and I play a lot of Malzahar. Both those champions feel very good into Zoe. It's but it's like, it feels like you mess up that one time, you get one shot or you get 80%ed or whatever, and it's super frustrating. And while we're all raging about Zoe, my biggest complaint is actually the summoner spell RNG in lane. Because I think that there's certain spells and abilities that she should not have access to in early lane. Like, teleport to me is just so game changing. And I've had games where, you know, the person takes ignite, they're trying to pressure you in lane, but if you have TP, you're like, okay, well, I just gotta kind of survive this. I TP back, but then they pick up a teleport as well, and now you're just like screwed, because you get, like, they pick up the TP, now they dump all their mana into you. You have to come back when you have no goodbye. They TP back as well, like, they can just do it again. And I've even had lanes where the person got two TPs within 5 minutes, and things like that, to me, is too game warping. Like, I'm more okay with the other summoner spells, even though they can be game changing. Like, I feel like there should be a system almost where certain spells and items are time gated, where it's like, you can't get teleport before 10 minutes or whatever that time is, right? But when someone wins the game off of a teleport dropping in lane, that's going to feel so bad in pro play.
Yeah, there's a few things that I'd want to see from Zoe as we put on like our fake designer hats. Like, I understand why they don't let the first part of the sleep be QSS'd, but I want that to be QSS'able. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a low cooldown. You're going to have other opportunities to land it. Let someone QSS it off right away and not get one shot, right? If you're going to be able to itemize that way. I like the teleport idea. And that's pretty much it as far as I'm seeing. And then the damage goes down a little bit. And that's going to make her win rate, like, in the dumpster for a little bit of it. But that's where I see the most annoying things of the kit.
Yeah, you definitely have to be super careful because you want her to be rewarded for those big plays, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you land all of your abilities on these, like, crazy skill shots that are ping-ponging all over the place.
It's like, what's the reward?
Yeah. And this,
half the health? All the health?
You definitely still want her to be rewarded. So it is super difficult. And, you know, although we are, like, complaining from the enemy of Zoe side, she definitely still does want to have that power. I do really like Azalea's point of reducing the RNG though, because that is something, especially if you know, every champion's going to be available in competitive, and this, we always have to think about competitive play, having something where I've actually had it where she picked up a gunblade level 2 and literally just walked in and there's nothing you could do. And just died solo because they got gunblade slow, then you get slept, then you get one shot.
The W also essentially has foxfire attached to it.
Yeah. So like there's a lot of random stuff that they're interesting things. Like they've done, I think, a good job with Kindred of like kind of corralling those.
Pseudo RNG basically instead of true RNG.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we didn't even plan to talk about Zoe before the episode. Like, clearly this is a very talked about champion because the people that play Zoe love playing the champion. So, like, there's something there that was done right. It's just a matter of making it not as obnoxious to play again.
It's definitely causing a lot of commotion in the preseason, which is thematic with the champion.
It's the moment for the commotion.
There you go. She likes to have that stuff. I hope that she gets through the ban phase and you get to see her in the hands of pros.
I mean, all the mid laners are basically spamming it. All the pro mid laners seem to really enjoy playing. I'm seeing everyone spamming it anytime it's not banned. I think there is incredibly high skill cap. It's very fun to watch the champion be played by someone who is really good. Like, there's many, many positive things about it. But it's always going to be a balance of, like, is it more fun for the person playing it or less fun for the person playing against it? You know, it has to be, like, you want to feel really good for Zoe. She pulls off that combo, max range. She should probably be able to one-shot that squishy, but maybe it should be harder to do. Maybe she shouldn't be able to shoot the sleep through a massive wall or whatever, right? It's going to be a balance.
I will say, I don't have those same feelings about Ornn. I'm not like, oh, I hope Ornn gets through big ban phase so I get to see Ornn in the hands of a pro. I don't care.
it feels good that Ornn, like, I played against this champion. I was talking about how it's OP. I'm like, it's not that OP. It can't be that bad. I'm like, let me try Trundle. Well, Trundle loses to Ornn. Let me try Darius. Well, it turns out Ornn has a 57% win rate against Darius when he's supposed to be a tank counter. Well, Fiora probably wins though, right? Oh, wait. Smeb got absolutely slammed 1v1 by Khan on Ornn. It's like, what beats this thing? Like, any melee champion just loses. It feels so bad.
Good champ. Forge God, dude.
He's good champ.
What are you going to do?
Yep. Not much.
He's got Nurse in the patch. His percent health damage goes down like 2% and the cooldown goes up. We'll see what that does. That's going to do something, right?
Yeah.
What's your most important, what's your biggest change of the patch? Because we went pretty long on Ornn and Zoe, but patch 7.24 notes literally just shipped. So we were reading over them this morning. I know you had some Shen thoughts. I have some thoughts on the Morgan Zyra changes that I think are interesting.
I know part of the thought is that it's going to push them in the jungle.
I want to try it in the jungle. Yeah. I thought that was
supposed to be secret. They were like, specifically in their notes, they were like, let's not say that this is jungle. We'll just leave it out there for people to explore and find out themselves.
I mean, the changes are specifically geared.
Oh, but you don't talk about secrets.
I mean, I didn't say it. Zale said
the changes
it.
Neither
you talk
are
about secrets.
Specifically geared towards, you know, making things more work in jungle, right? It's like, you read the patch notes, says damage taken by plants. Plants now die instantly to melee basic attacks, but can survive more hits, overtime damage effects, and small minions / monsters.
I wonder, tell you guys anything.
Yeah, so I didn't think
I was reprimanding him. What
I definitely
are you doing?
Think that could be something that could be like pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, I want
to
see if it works.
One of the big things for me is Shen actually though. Like I see that the nerf to Shen, and I was like, oh my god, Like, that seems crazy. I know we had talked about this a bit more in depth, chat, but like, the base damage bonus on Q, and yes, there's percentage HP, there's pull through damage, and there are other things, but the base damage bonus on Q level one went from 15 to 5, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a triple hit thing. So that's like, that's essentially 30 if 30 you get damage. The three hit combo. I'm also not sure if that's going to affect you being able to one hit range minion after a turret hits it, because that's something that could actually be pretty huge, because if you can no longer last hit like a range minion with one turret hit, then like range matchups become extremely difficult for Shen, especially in combination with the fact that Bramble Vest is basically being like deleted as an early game item. It's much more of like you need a bunch of armor, then it's good.
120 armor break even.
So those two things, especially for Shen and top lane, I think could make it a lot tougher against some of the range matchups.
Yeah, I obviously am interested in seeing Morgana and Zyra in the jungle. I thought this patch was a little interesting because there's a few things that I thought would get hit that didn't get hit. So like they took down Malzahar. He was, you know, king of the mid lane. I think Xerath is also there, right? So now Xerath will just kind of supplant him as the best. They nerfed Jarvan. He's been super good in the top lane in the jungle, but Aftershock Rammus still exists. He just has no answer now.
One thing that they have been doing is nerfing a lot of the items that Rammus uses. And I did see in here another nerf to Bramble Vest. So Rammus is getting like a pseudo hit, I guess. It's not like a very big thing. I think he'll still be, you know, a very strong tank option from the jungle. But he's, I feel like he is getting slowly whittled down.
I don't necessarily mind it. Like, most of the things that seem the most need of nerfs did receive nerfs of varying degrees, and there's still a lot of volatility with the preseason. They changed around a few of the masteries, like eyeball collections, only one on assist instead of two now, and like just little bits of tuning here and there. And I think it's fine, right? We still don't know necessarily what is the best. We just know what the current trends are.
I know what the best
I was a little bit surprised by some of the champions that didn't get nerfed, though, as far as, you know, you're talking about, like, there was a lot of notable ones that did get hit, but like MF, for example. MF has an extremely high win rate. It's very powerful in AD carry and support. You know, that was a little bit surprising to me, that it didn't really get touched. You know, Sona, I don't think really got touched as well, unless I missed that one. That one is one that like a lot of people are kind of, you know, frustrated with, because Sona is very, very powerful with both Airy and Kleptomancy and these sorts of things. So I was a little bit surprised on some of the kind of notably missing ones, maybe.
I feel okay saying it now because it's like the end of the episode.
You don't think
not as many
watching.
People are listening.
Okay.
But I've instantly, as soon as I saw it, thought that the magical free-ass boots is the best mastery in the whole game. Like,
you were telling me about Celerity and water walking before. You were like, I was like, free boots are good, Kobe. You're like, nah, it's Celerity and water walking.
At no point did I ever say that free boots are not good. This entire month, I've been ranting about how good free boots are. Where have you been?
You were telling me water walking. You convinced me. You're trying to lead me astray.
A week or two ago, we were just talking about free-ass boots is the best mastery in the game. But I'm coming around on Celerity. Mainly because I like the rest of the sorcery tree a little bit more than I like the rest of the inspiration tree if I'm going secondary.
So you're talking about a secondary then? Then what's your secondary that you take with it?
I like the options between Scorch and Waterwalking. Scorch is just so good for like early gank assists. If the game ever slows down, I think Gathering Storm is going to be bomb, but it just never matters in most of these games because they're decided by 15 minutes. And then I look at inspiration, it's like, what are you doing? Approach velocity, cosmic insight.
More non-believers. I like it.
What
cosmic
continue
insight?
Continue to not use the
cosmic
most.
Is pretty good.
I use free boots.
Huh?
I use free boots.
Okay.
Yeah. Because
I like early ganking though, and I have to wait until like 9 minutes before I can gank. I'd rather just boots with Celerity.
Stay that path.
And the only time I don't go free boots is when I'm going Predator, because then it feels pretty bad to be like waiting.
Don't go Predator.
That's just anti-sync.
But it's fun.
Electric boot, free ass boots.
Yeah. But I actually did some testing with free boots versus Celerity, and you need such a high, like incredibly high move speed before you actually get more move speed from Celerity than you do from free boots.
The trade-off is the time period.
Totally.
So I did instantly did the, like, it's the most gold value that you're going to get out of any of like the little baby masteries. Yeah. That's why I liked it so much at the very beginning. And for me, I, as a jungler, always like buying combat power early, finishing my smite. And the time that you get the boots is reduced by getting kills or assists. So you don't have to wait the full 10 minutes. Like, I'll usually, games right now are so quick, you're in there for at least 3 or 4, you know, kills and assists, you know, before this is going to go off. So you get it a bit earlier, you get it before you even finish your jungle item, which a lot of people want to finish their jungle item, rush that because it's one of the most efficient things in the game. So purely if you're looking at it from a math perspective, which is where I always come from, that's where I feel like there's a lot of strong backing for it.
Yeah.
Plus, it retains the bonuses of the bonus move speed and, you know, degraded or less upgrade costs later on. And, like, it's just, it feels like it, to me, like it makes the game flow extremely well.
Yeah.
But we don't want more people to use it because then they're going to nerf it. So,
And Celerity,
like the counter argument.
So Celerity is getting nerfed this patch.
Yeah.
It's 3%. So
I was already off that.
Time for those boots.
The only time I liked Celerity more was when someone who I thought like Ultimate Hat and things like that were super good on.
Well, I just bring both. So, like I do inspiration sorcery specs or sorcery inspiration specs.
My Celerity water walking speech to you, Azale, was purely for Kindred because I play the mind game of fighting the guy over the first marks on Scuttlecrab.
Okay.
So, because water walking gives you insane attack damage
early
game. Like, you'll win every single 1v1, you know, regardless of who the enemy champion is. If you have Celerity water walking level 3, you go to the mark, and I would just wait in the little bush by the mark.
Yeah.
You know, the enemy junker is always like, oh, I'm going to take this mark from Kindred. Ha ha. Beat you here, dum dum.
Yeah.
And then you kill them, you get their mark, and you get the Scuttlecrab.
Because I've been playing a fair bit of Warwick lately, too, with Predator, I was kind of trying to decide, should I go Celerity water walking or should I go free boots? And then that's why I was doing testing and stuff and seeing like where the breakpoint would be because I was like, okay, well, with Warwick, with your passive, like, you know, you get a ton of move speed with your W. Like, is that going to make Celerity a lot better? But like, even with Swifties and stuff like that, yeah, exactly. Even with Swifties, it wasn't actually better. So I just ended up coming to the conclusion that, like, I basically need my W active. I need like rank 2 boots. I need all this stuff before the Celerity starts giving me more movement speed. So plus, it's not working.
It's always an early game versus late game,
or
later game argument. Celerity,
and you do get a little bit of attack damage and stuff from Celerity too, but it never feels like it's more than a couple AD.
Yeah,
we got to end this episode because we don't want the people to latch onto this.
You got a
Twitter question.
It's gonna happen at All Star, man. Everyone's gonna be bringing free boots and Celerity every game.
Every pro I've talked to like thinks I'm stupid, and people ping me when I play in solo queue. People have pinged my secondary
inspiration and being like, "Why are you not like, precision with coup de grace?
Why don't you have more damage, you stupid, stupid idiot?" I'm like, "Yeah."
There you go. You like it. It's brilliant.
Let's get the question.
Twitter questions.
Yeah, the bull at the bull actually asks Riot Azale. Doesn't ask the rest of us, but he has to dive
all.
So I'm going to ask this to you. How much does Mike Young's performance at All-Star matter? Is it a decent indicator of future performance? Because they have TSM's top side of the map and TSM's code.
I don't think it matters. I think that, you know, as Kobe said, scrims are just starting. The first time I've heard of any scrims in NA starting is like a day or two ago, right? You know, teams are just now beginning. I think a big thing that TSM also changed, even though there's more talk about the roster, is the coaching, right? You know, they have Song as the head coach, who was very highly praised. I think that stuff is going to take time. I think that if he looks absolutely garbage, then maybe people are kind of concerned. But like, if he looks fine, if he's, you know, doing all right, then I don't think it's really any cause for concern.
I think All-Star is scrims. So was it last episode we talked about the rant about wanting to hear
god.
Like, ooh, a scrim god matters. Yeah. So if he crushes All-Star, people will be like, man, he's so good. And it's like, it doesn't really matter. I do think there would be a minor cause for concern if someone is really awful.
Yeah, he's like exceptionally bad.
Yeah, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So you can only lose with your All-Star performance.
Come on, guys. This is competitive All-Stars.
All right, Kobe.
How much does it matter?
It matters about 32%.
Perfect.
If Mike Young goes free boots and wins all his games, does TSM win the world?
I'm going to be angry because everyone else is going to start using them.
All right, next one. Charles Thompson at TSM Weapon says, if Zoe is activated for All-Stars, do you think she's going to be 100% banned or first picked?
I do.
She is activated. Will she be 100% banned or first pick? Yeah. 100% presence, I think is yes.
I think
but
at
presence,
least, at least close.
It doesn't have to be first pick if it's presence.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm willing to commit to first pick because maybe because there are counter picks. Like, I do think there are some pretty bad matchups for her.
I'll say no. I don't think you want to first pick that champ.
I think presence, though, really strong.
If you blind pick a champ that's better, like good into Zoe, you might be okay blocking it.
I definitely think it's going to be near 100% presence, though, because either people are going to be practicing a ton, which I know almost all the pros are, and they're going to want to show it off, especially at All-Stars when it's going to be kind of a flashy and cool champion. Or you haven't been practicing it, you haven't been scrimming against it, and you're like, I don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Last
make
question.
Want to bet on it?
Well, we all had the same thing.
No, I think 100%.
100%.
Banned first pick.
Yep. Not a single game missed.
Yep. Yeah, sure. What do you want to... What are you willing to stick
you
on?
Want to get another dress on there, buddy?
We have no...
The return of the pillow?
This is our last episode.
The return
episode.
Of the pillow.
This is our last episode of the year. The payoff is nothing. It'd have to be like a picture on Twitter or something.
I mean, we
first
can start
episode next
there
year.
There you go.
That's too long of a delay for the payoff, man. I don't want to see Kobe with the dress in the first episode.
Pillow, if it's not 100% presence, then you start next episode in the
deal.
Next episode will be our first episode of next year.
There you go.
Deal.
It's a deal. Right. We already shook.
All right.
I will be the only one to not have to wear the body pillow.
I think you're going to be wearing it. I think one game.
And he will have bet twice. He's the only one with
100%
bet
participation. We'll see. I'm going to be interested. Kobe's going to be making bribes and stuff. He's like, man, Zoe.
I'm going to alter the pillow, too. I'm going to give you cut some nipple holes or something.
Oh, that sounds great.
You wear a shirt underneath. Like it doesn't. Okay, last question. Paulo Ananas, I can't even say that Twitter name, at PeyorRoRoSan. Says, if you guys had to put together an NA caster team versus EU caster for like a team match, what would the teams be?
Doesn't matter because we're going to win.
Extra points if you put Riot Jet on mid lane.
Yeah. We've talked about this.
I don't think it gets more free.
Yeah. We talked about this. It'll be Azale in the top lane, Kobe in the jungle. I would end up moving to mid lane and kind of suck at it, but it would be fine because I'd probably just play a tank.
Freak's
AD. Freak would be our AD carry, and then I think Zyrene would end up supporting.
Yeah.
So I was also thinking about that. Zyrene's been playing a lot of top lane in solo queue.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we have to make him and Azale 1v1 for the spot.
For the top lane. And then he would move to support.
Whoever wins gets the spot. And whoever
I'm Phil. I can play whatever you want.
I would also be somewhat down to try and cheese him with double melee bottom lane. If like
Flowers is the odd man out as the only diamond not on the team because he's Garner one trick and he's bannable.
He's pretty banned. He's been...
He played
a lot of
more than one game a month recently, though.
Yeah, he's been playing a lot of Zin.
I know he's playing Zin. He plays some Warwick, too, but he still considers himself a one trick.
Correct.
Yeah.
His heart still lies with the Scorpion.
His heart's always with the Scorpion. But
the reason Freak has to play Marksman is, like, I don't think EU has anyone close to Freak's level at AD carry.
I don't think they have anyone close to any of our levels.
Team?
I mean, Crepo was their best player.
They have DeFicio, Vedius.
Vedius was once a master player in Season 5 as a mid laner.
Says who?
Vedius? I haven't verified.
All right, well, there
he's just like a pathological liar.
And then who is the guy?
Are they allowed to use production people? Because their observer is
the
master's
this is
top
caster.
Laner.
This is casters.
All the play-by-plays.
So
they
then
got,
it just has to be all them.
Draco?
Yeah, all
how good is Medic?
Draco's quick shot and Medic or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess, they're going to get bopped.
Yeah, we're going to
crush
them.
We should do this. So we challenge you, EU casters, to a match.
The problem is, like, when do you play it and what ping to use? Because we did the show match, right?
We can play on Europe.
We did, like, the Draven match.
But
where... I wasn't playing.
Sure the show match was...
We can GPM play with the ping disadvantage here. It will still be free.
Yeah. All right, yeah.
We'll play on Europe.
Servers. I'll play
whenever
on
they
servers.
Want.
Whatever team they want.
Yeah.
And we'll put together a team.
And we'll smash them.
But this time, we're not subbing in pro players.
No. No cheese.
No cheating.
No cheese.
Yeah. That's it?
Yeah. We'll set that up.
All right. Good episode. Good way to end the year.
Yeah. So you guys know this is our last episode of the year for All-Star. It's like... Did I even say the episode number at the start? I think we got 32 episodes.
Oh, my God.
Episodes
this
off.
Is the first time you
it
didn't
just
do
said,
it.
Oh, no.
It's a special All-Star edition of The Dive. We did 32 episodes. Start of the summer split, episode 9 was as soon as we started getting in the set to be able to make it a YouTube show. I think that really helped popularity. But the people that were watching on SoundCloud are incredibly valuable. That core podcast listeners seem to stay with us the whole time. Really appreciate all the support for like this podcast thing. One thing that I will say is like any ideas any of the fans have for the show, like we check the Twitter and the Reddit threads for these shows a lot, and we're always trying to make this show better. More episodes, less episodes, more of a certain content, less of a certain content.
Should I be talking more? Should I be talking less? Should
Should Kobe wear a funny hat next year, maybe?
What guests should we try and get on the show? Like, we got a few experimentations with one guest. I thought that worked pretty well for being on, like, part of the show. I know some team owners could potentially be on the show, too. Like, we want to do a lot of new stuff next year, so.
Yeah, or if you guys have any segment ideas or anything, because definitely going to be looking for the long term for the show. Been really enjoying it. It's been a fun first year, and I think that's it for us, guys. I guess we'll see you next year.
Yeah, we'll be back next year. Our first episode should come out right before the NALCS return, so keep your eyes open and see you then.